takes a lot of effort to try to imagine the future.
The number of retired people is just exploding.
But now there's a kind of a social capital around being really vital.
People are starving for knowledge.
So what's going to drive that quality of life?
Hey, this is the Insights Panel podcast from Brighthouse Financial, a podcast for financial professionals about retirement planning, bringing you leading insights from leading experts to help you stay ahead of the curve and have more productive conversations with your clients. My name is Amy He, and this episode, we're looking at a really big topic, the future of retirement. Retirement is changing. Huge social, economic, and technological forces are already reshaping how we live, work, and plan for later life. This episode, we're looking at how these trends are going to transform the retirement of tomorrow, from the big picture of the national economy right down to your relationship with individual clients. Here to share their expert insights with us, we have Michelle Connolly, professor of economics at Duke University, Dan Goldstein, behavioral economist and principal researcher at Microsoft Research, Jay Moreland, client behavior coach and author of The Emotional Investor, and Mark Zinder, consultant and advisor coach. But first, I spoke to Erica Orange and Jared Wiener, who are futurists and trend consultants at The Future Hunters. And I asked them, what is the future of retirement?
So that is a broad question, but in order to really understand what the future of retirement looks like, we need to first understand what the forces are going to be that really shape the future of retirement.
Because someone might be looking at a retirement that could span 15 or 20 years, or they might be looking at a retirement that spans 30 to 40 years. It completely changes the mental calculus as far as what you want to retire for, what are your goals, how do you want to approach retirement.
But now there's a kind of a social capital around being really vital, being really vibrant.
I'm starting my own business for the first time in my career. I'm going back into the workforce to do whatever it is that I do. In some cases, they're engaging in things like adrenaline travel and adventure travel, which is something we've never really seen as much from the kind of 60-plus set. But the flip side to that is that for a lot of people, there's a level of concern and trepidation because, again, if you know you're planning for a 20-year retirement, you can basically figure out exactly what investment vehicles, for example, fit that model of retirement. If you think you're planning for a 40-year retirement, that's a whole different ballgame. So it's complicated. It's exciting for some. It's scary for others. At the end of the day, that's why this conversation now is so different than it would have been even 5 or 10 years ago.
So what does this complicated future look like for financial advisors?
Yeah, so I mean, we've identified over the last few years that trust is really becoming a luxury that people are increasingly going to pay a premium for. We define a luxury basically in economic terms as something which is in extremely high demand and extremely short supply. And frankly, with everything becoming automated or what we call other sourced to smart systems, technology, robotics, software, those things are basically popping up largely because of efficiency and cost and time. But on the other end of the spectrum, we are seeing now the pitfalls of just falling back on algorithms and technology in a lot of sectors, including financial services. And so I think one of the ways that, you know, we can really, really add value is by showing people that they can trust in the human relationship, the relationship with the advisor. That is something, I think that's something people will absolutely pay a premium for. That is the ultimate luxury, knowing that you are getting the trust out of a one-on-one human relationship. And so while you are going to see certain sectors within financial services become automated increasingly in the next few years, I think there's an opportunity for high-level advisors to remain not just relevant, but to actually be value-added versus what they've been perceived as in the past, which is really cool.
And it's really the cultivation of a lot of the softer skills too. It's understanding things like relationship building and empathy, and as silly as it sounds, even the ability to read nonverbal body cues. And it's kind of like the financial advisor acting in some ways like a psychologist, understanding really the kind of subconscious needs of the retiree. And a lot of these things, you know, it's a whole new skill set, totally new competencies required as well. And I see one circle, which is technologist. I see another circle, which is life coach. And then when you put those two together, the intersection is really interesting. And I think that that's where more financial advisors are going to have to play. And I think on the part of a lot of retirees, they're going to look for
kind of these hybrid skills when they're working with their advisor.
So at the end of the day, that the intelligence, emotional intelligence, critical thinking intelligence, that's kind of the differentiator that a good advisor will bring to the table.
That was Erica Orange and Jared Wiener on how the role of the advisor is likely to evolve. So if financial advisors need to cultivate more of their soft skills in the future, what I wanted to know was how human beings conceptualize, how they think about the future. So next, I spoke to behavioral economist Dan Goldstein. So Dan, I wanted to ask you about how people think about the future. Do you think that people are good at that?
If you think about human beings all the time that they've been around, they haven't really needed to think 30, 40 years in the future. That's not really what we were thinking about thousands of years ago. Just for that reason, we're not going to be very good at thinking that far ahead, and you know we shouldn't be. It's nothing wrong with us. It's just that we're put into a situation in which we're making difficult decisions about something that's very far off. We have a lot of options ahead of us, and we have a lot of futures ahead of us. And when we do try to think that far in the future, we quickly realize that it takes a lot of effort to try to imagine the future, and that can be pretty exhausting. And because it's exhausting, we tend not to do it. And we see very similar things in retirement. When you start people saving for retirement and you set a default level of saving for that person, they tend to keep the default level that the employer picks for them. That would be an amazing coincidence if the employer picked the exact level that suits their preferences. But whatever gets picked, most people tend to keep it, which just means they never want to think about, are they on track for retirement? They never want to think about, are they underprepared? Are they saving too much? Like, are they going to hit their goals? It's because they just don't want to think about their own death. They don't want to. It's too important a topic to decide on. There's never a good day to think about your own death, as I like to say. And because of that, people don't, and they go with the default. I should say that, you know, the fact that people don't think about it doesn't mean that people don't care about it. They care about it a lot, but, you know, like I said, it's never a good day for them to start thinking about it, and so they don't. So there's that fear of what could happen when they face the truth.
So there seem to be some issues with avoidance and then people thinking about the future. What do you think advisors can do then?
I think it's the advisor's role to be virtual reality for the person, if you will. It is their job to make the future clear to people, bring the future closer, paint scenarios of the future, and help people think about what the future is going to be like. You know, in research that I did, we showed young people pictures of themselves at retirement age using virtual reality software. We just took photographs of young people, college students, and we aged those photographs so that they looked like older people, people in their 60s and 70s. And merely looking at those pictures caused these young people to say that they would save more money for retirement compared to a control group. So just giving them a clear picture of the future, just reminding them that they will get older, helps. Something as simple as that. Now, of course, the advisor can bring a lot more to it than just reminding you that you're going to be older. That is, it's not so difficult to take a picture of a person and age progress that picture. When we did it, it was expensive. We used expensive software to do it. But now there are smartphone apps in which you can take a picture of somebody, age progress that picture, and show them what they're going to look like at retirement age. I would say use the tools that you have at your disposal to paint the most realistic picture of the future for people. And, you know, if you then become this decision calculator that shows them if they save this much, then they'll have this future. If they save that much, then they'll have that future. Then you're not biasing people one way or the other. You're not just, you know, trying to scare them or persuade them. You're just giving them honest, real-time feedback about what the future could be like. And I think that's the best that you can do for somebody. I think that's the best way to improve a decision is just to be a simulator, a visualizer, a thing that can help translate for people actions today into outcomes in the future.
That was Dan Goldstein on bringing the future closer to your clients. Next, I met with Michelle Connolly, professor at economics at Duke, to talk about the environment that retirees and their advisors will be living in the future. and I asked her, what are the big macroeconomic issues we need to think about?
So I think there are three key macroeconomic factors that are influencing the future of retirement. One has to do with Social Security and Medicare and how much people will be able to rely on those sources of income during their retirement. So our population has very much trusted that Social Security and Medicare could take care of them in their old age. But with the baby boomers coming in, the number of retired people is just exploding, and we're not having a huge increase in our working base. So realistically, our ability to rely on these institutions to take care of us once we're retired has been greatly diminished. In the 1950s, there were over 8 workers per beneficiary. Now we're at less than 3 workers per beneficiary, which means that, according to Social Security, as of 2034, it will be insolvent, which means that there will have to be either a large increase in taxation of the population at that time in order to offset this or to satisfy this need, or there'll have to be a reduction in the overall benefits paid out by Social Security and Medicare. So another factor that has been occurring since probably the early 90s is we've had a big change in technology and the type of labor being demanded by this technology, which has caused a widening income gap between skilled and unskilled workers. It also means that there's greater automation at the mid to lower skilled worker range. And this was kind of the range in which many Americans expected stability, and that stability has disappeared. So sources of income during the end of their careers are becoming less certain. So there's a whole segment of our society which had expected a much smoother ride, and technological change has impacted that dimension. In terms of the housing market, many people who are wealthy enough to own homes have a majority of their wealth in the form of their house. It puts them at risk when home prices fall. And it also means that since most of their assets are in their house, if they have these unexpected costs that they aren't able to cover at end of life, such as large medical expenses, they may end up having to sell their house in order to cover these costs. And if you have to sell your house at the time when the housing market is low, then you're going to be really hurt. So all of these things are factoring into the fact that individuals currently, given the uncertainty that we're facing, need to be certain that they are able to take care of themselves in the future.
So it seems from what you're saying that Social Security is not going to be as dependable in the future as it was in the past. Do you think Americans are well equipped to handle that?
The statistics suggest that most Americans are not well situated. According to the Social Security Administration, it says that 46% of the workforce in the private industry has no private pension coverage, that 39% of workers have reported that they or their spouse have not saved any money personally for retirement. I think advisors need to make it very clear to people what the realities are in terms of what they can expect from the government moving forward. There's a need for people to make sure that they will have an income stream after retirement, that they can guarantee that.
So that was a sobering take from Michelle Connolly. I wanted to know how all of these changes and challenges might affect the way financial advisors help their clients navigate an uncertain future. So I chatted with advisor coach Mark Zinder and Jay Moreland, who works with client behavior. So Mark, what does the future of retirement look like for clients?
They say that the person who's going to live to be 150 is alive today. The problem is, do we prepare for that? And that's what we should be discussing today.
That's a great point, Mark. If you have investors that are retiring at, let's say, 65, and yet they're going to live to 90 or 95, that's a lot of years. And it's not just all about money. It's also about what do they do with their time. So what's going to drive that quality of life? Where are they going to get their happiness and self-identity from? So what really drives us are the passions. And oftentimes, we individually, as well as advisors with their clients, don't dive deep enough. And so I think that having advisors do that and asking more values-based questions and diving two or three questions deep to truly understand what drives clients. And now all of a sudden you have a great value that's being offered by the advisor that has nothing to do with money, but everything to do with quality of life.
How do you think advisors actually figure out what those values are?
You have always said the answer's in the asking, the answer's in the listening. I've coached a lot of advisors in my life, and if there's one thing that I need them to stop doing is stop interrupting your clients.
That's great. I love that. One common phrase that I suggest that advisors use when asking these questions, because when you even when you have good advisors that are asking good questions, oftentimes they fail to go deep enough because, you know, they get kind of that superficial answer and it's like, okay, great, I got this. Let's go to the next question and kind of get through it because we're not used to asking questions. So it might be a little bit uncomfortable, but I often suggest that once they come back with an answer, simply to use the three words, tell me more. And just as you mentioned, Mark, just be quiet, right? And silence is okay.
Right.
If it's a truly good question, it'll take a little bit of time to get a good answer.
That is so true. When a client asks you, the advisor, a question, are they really interested in what you think, or do they want confirmation on what they think? And sometimes they're just looking for confirmation. And how would you know unless you said something like, why do you ask? And they'll tell you why they're asking.
So the first step to getting trust is to get somebody engaged with you. And I think that that is a significant roadblock for many advisors out there, both with their clients and with prospective clients, because there's just so much noise out there. And we are all competing with each other to grab somebody's attention. But if we don't get their attention, it's really difficult to build the relationship and to earn that trust.
And today, what we're discovering is people are starving for knowledge. And so it is important today that you become a teacher trainer, and that is teach them something they don't know. Don't talk down to them, but talk with them. And show them, rather than talking in alphas and betas and R squared, help them understand in terms that they can understand and talk to them rather than talking at them.
Thank you to Mark and Jay, and of course, Dan, Michelle, Erica, and Jared for today's great insights into our topic on the future of retirement. That's all from the Insights panel on this episode. Thanks for listening and join us for the next episode when we ask, what do clients really need for retirement and how can we help them get it? Don't forget, you can catch the podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights panel from Bright House Financial. Based on Social Security Administration findings, if substantial changes are not made to the way in which Social Security is funded, the program would become insolvent in 2034. Substantial changes would include these examples: an increase in revenues, a reduction in scheduled benefits, or some combination of these approaches would have to be adopted. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial, Inc. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers were compensated for their participation.